Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see the thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning, guys.
Morning, Russell.
Hey, Rusky.
Hey, G-Force.
I'm offended, Russell.
You're offended?
I'm offended because last week or the week before when you were recording with Perrin, you said no one ever asks you how you're doing. I always ask you how you're doing, Russell. Every time I'm here.
Oh, thank you, G-Force. I think I was just caught up in the moment.
Yes.
How you, Gad?
Yeah, I'm good. It was an early morning. I mean, I've been good. I've been getting up early, but like today just felt.
Today was a tough one, man. Joburg is Miz.
Yeah.
This is Miz weather.
And also I went out partying with Sam on Saturday.
Oh, no, we must talk about this.
So I'm still catching up with that sleep.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our video store. We've got ourselves a real movie weather
week.
Yeah. In Joburg this week. It is overcast, it is cold, it is dark, and so now is the time to be watching stuff.
Mm.
So we're here to help you figure out. Today is the Clerks episode, so it's just going to be the three of us. Myself, Russell, Gad, and Graham, and we're just going to talk about what we're watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas.
Mm.
Later this week is going to be our guest episode. So on Thursdays is when we have interesting people pop in to rent something. And this week is going to be Anton Taylor.
Cool.
Who is a very funny, interesting, dynamic dude.
Cool.
Quick little announcement, just for those browsing the aisles. Attention all customers, this is to let you know that Encounters Documentary Film Festival is here. It is on its way. Tickets are available at the Bioscope for all the Bioscope screenings, but it is happening across the country. And you can go to encounters.co.za to see the full program. So these are documentaries, both local and international, and they're always a fantastic selection. So we hope to see you. The festival is going to run from the 20th to the 30th of June. So it is on its way.
What are you looking forward to at the festival?
There's some interesting stuff. There's this documentary called Into Thin Air, about this culture in Japan of how people disappear.
Oh, I've heard about this. I've listened to a podcast about it.
Yeah, the name. Yes,
it's actually got the same name.
Classic Japan.
Right. Yes.
They give things a name. So I'll find it in a moment. But there's a Japanese word which is the main name of this documentary.
They literally come with like a forklift, and they go up to like whatever level in the apartment and they take them out the back and
so
then they just drive them away.
It's a whole culture of people who don't want to be found.
Right.
So it could be like the Yakuza, or it could be shame, or it could be some reason.
Right.
But as much as 80,000 people will go missing a year, will purposefully make themselves missing, which I think is interesting.
There are businesses that do this for you.
Yeah. And this documentary talks about the companies that will come in at the night and take you away and put you in another town and like relocate you.
It's unreal.
That looks really interesting. Then there's this other documentary called Black People Don't Get Depressed, which I think is really interesting. It's a South African documentary. And it got parts of it got filmed in the Bioscope. I think they did some interviews.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I just think it's one of those where, especially with documentary, where the name just gets your attention.
Yes.
And you're like, hold on, what?
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, perhaps there are these cultures of, you know, mental health isn't an issue.
Yeah.
You know, in perhaps African culture.
They're not depressed because they've never been diagnosed.
Yeah, and exactly. What have you got to be depressed about, or, you know, whatever. Every culture's got these different approaches.
Yes.
And I think just by virtue of its name, it's worth watching.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth just, you know, this theme. So that screening, there's some good stuff.
Nice.
It's always quite difficult for me, funny enough, because you know, 20 films come at one go.
Yeah.
And it's quite hard to decode. But you can actually see, and I've always said this, and I want us to chat about it at some point today when we talk about cinema going, audiences, the success of movies so far this year.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to that. But the one thing I can say is that what I've always thought is that an audience is smart.
Yeah.
An audience, certain audiences, are smarter than you think,
at
least in the bioscope's world.
Right.
And so you can usually see, it's quite interesting to see which ones start selling quicker than the others because they've sniffed it out, you know. If there's something about it, be it the who's involved, the director or the synopsis or the just even the poster, and certain ones just do better.
Yeah.
And the audience kind of identifies the smart
People are discerning with what they pick to watch.
Yeah, listen, the whole program's amazing. So I'm not saying that, that Encounters puts in duds. But, you know, there'll always be ones that are just perhaps a bit more exciting.
Right.
Always, all of them have some merit.
It's like that with any film festival. Well, I've done the Durban Film Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like every movie has its own merit. But
yeah,
I don't like everything. So
Yeah.
What are we watching, guys? Well, let's actually get into it. Sorry, you alluded to the fact that myself and Gad had a pretty busy weekend. We played a show. So myself and Gad are in Short Straw, and we played a first show in a while. It's been a few months since we played
like
a show.
6 weeks.
The band is a little bit quieter these days because we're all so busy with all the other things in our lives. But we played Feastival, which was a show in Cape Town. And the one member of our band was celebrating his birthday, but we were all very tired because we only left the festival like at sort of midnight.
Yeah, awesome.
Right.
Sort of 1 in the morning, and Gad put up his hand to carry on partying just to give the guy a night out.
Yeah. I'm usually on the first train back with Russell. Right.
Yeah. So we've spoken about this before. There's the first train and the second train, which is the first train will be the safest, most guaranteed ride home back to the hotel or the venue or wherever we're staying.
Generally, Russ driving the rented van.
Generally me. I'm sober. But there's one rule of the first train, which is that it waits for no one.
Right.
So you have to decide quite soon in the night whether you first train or second
when
train.
When Russell wants to go, Russell's going.
First train means you go when we go. Like, I'm not going to wait for you
for
another 5 minutes or 10 minutes while you just dick around or do something. No, it's very interesting. And we were all first train.
Yeah.
And then from the hotel, Gad then went out.
It was Alice's idea, and then he looked at the time and he went,
It's amazing, eh? We're not the dudes we once were.
Yeah.
It was very different in Grahamstown 10 years ago. It's like everyone was out.
Yeah.
It's funny.
We watched a movie.
But then, myself and Gad did something else last week. We went to go watch Ezra.
Okay. I really liked Ezra.
So Ezra was a screening. It's now in cinemas. It was a screening last week, Tuesday, at the offices of UIP. So UIP are one of the bigger film distributors.
Yes.
And so they host these press screenings a couple of days before. So we were there as the video store to watch it. But I also go to these now with the Bioscope hat to see whether perhaps these films could work at the Bioscope.
Yes.
It's either a film I've seen coming and I've programmed, and then I watch it to reaffirm whether I've made the right decision for the Bioscope, or I've chosen to not program it and then I want to be convinced otherwise.
Right.
And so Ezra is this film that I think a lot of people just aren't going to know about. It's a smaller film that's flying under the radar, and we'll get into it, but it is a very small film where it's a small, intimate story. But it's got De Niro in it.
Okay. You know, the trailer's on the Jimmy Kimmel YouTube page.
Yeah,
so I think he's a producer. He must be a producer.
Well, he's in the movie.
Yeah,
he's in the plot.
Yeah,
right.
But it's a passion project. Do you know that the film was made by one of the members of the cast, the sort of new boyfriend in the movie?
Oh, interesting.
He made this film, so he's an actor. You'll recognize him when you see him. And this is his passion project.
Right.
But Ezra is a film about a family, really. The dad is a struggling comedian, or he's trying to get his life in order, Rose Byrne is the wife, but they are separated. They're effectively on the cusp of divorce. And their son, Ezra, is a boy with autism. And it is played by an actor with autism.
Well, he wasn't fully autistic. He was able
to
kind
spectrum.
Of, he's definitely on the spectrum.
It's
but
a
he's
spectrum.
Able to be in school and communicate in some way.
Okay. Well, this is the inciting incident. This is the issue is that the dad, played by Bobby
Cannavale.
Cannavale.
Yeah, he's great.
You recognize him instantly.
Yeah.
He's a real character actor. Mm. He wants to put the boy in a normal school, but it's clear that the boy is not right for a normal school. He actually is on the cusp where he should actually be in a special school.
Right.
That could meet his needs, and things are falling apart. The dad can't kind of keep himself together. He's got a short fuse. No one in the movie really ever sort of talks to each other. They just talk at each other.
Oh, right.
It's this real, hostile environment to a point where it's not a smart idea, but the dad sort of effectively takes the boy and they go on this kind of road trip.
Okay.
He sort of gets him out of the city.
Right.
And then it comes up that he's been able to book a slot as a comedian on the Jimmy Kimmel show. So it becomes this road movie as he tries to get to LA from New York. So they cross country with authorities and a very worried mom following behind.
Right.
He's able to talk and communicate and get on with his son, but it's difficult because the son, this is the problem with autism is that you can't rationalize, you can't change their mind about certain things if they've got this love for something or they've got this block for not ever wanting to do something, like a metal fork to eat with a metal fork or, certain little things. And so it's quite a tough movie, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Mm.
I came out of it not thinking it was going to be a Bioscope movie.
Right.
It didn't quite sit with me on that. But
it was very heartwarming.
Little movie with big heart was what I sort of thought of.
Totally,
Yeah, and I mean, how did you feel, Gad?
I mean, I'd seen the trailer. I knew I was in for like a tearjerker. And yeah, I think it hit the right notes. The kid was great. And apparently he did have autism.
You can see. I mean, there's one thing when it's like Leonardo DiCaprio in Who's Eating Gilbert Grape? What's Eating Gilbert Grape? You can see those kind of those actors. This was very clearly a kid with autism.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting that kind of role is done by someone with that. And I actually was very curious I would be curious to see what that acting and that set procedure would be with someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a lot of me and my dad projected into Robert De Niro's character.
Really?
So I could relate on like a weird level.
Yeah, so De Niro played the grandfather.
Yes.
Of Bobby. And
Bobby's dad.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
The grandfather to Ezra. But yeah, when they talked to each other, they were talking at each other.
Yeah,
they weren't talking with each other. And
they
sort of go at each other in this particular way.
Yes.
But Rose Byrne acted the pants off this. I thought she was great.
Cool. Yeah.
Everyone really acted well. It's a great solid movie.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah.
And I think it is important for us to see these films and to see more autism so that we understand it. And
yeah, it's something that's been very poorly portrayed in films quite a lot.
Yeah, no, and it's odd. And
we
sometimes
get I Am Sam.
Yeah, and Predators. No, not Predators. The Predator.
I haven't seen that one.
It's terrible. It's like a Predator sequel. But the whole thing is there's a kid who has autism and predators want him or something because apparently autism is the next stage of human evolution. And it's like treating autism. It's one of those things that happens quite a few times where they treat autism like a superpower.
Yeah.
They do it a few times. Like there's a Bruce Willis movie, I can't remember, with some kid who has
Mercury Rising.
Yes. That also has like a kid who has autism and they treat it very poorly.
Oh, I barely remember that movie.
Yeah. What else have we been watching?
So I started a new show on Netflix called Eric.
Okay. Eric.
Eric with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, okay. Is it a show or a movie?
I thought it was a movie, but it's like a 6-part series.
Okay, and this is sort of the big monster.
Yeah. So the whole idea is that he is a creator of like a Sesame Street type show.
Okay. For kids,
yeah. And he's a puppeteer and he does the voice acting and his kid goes missing.
Okay.
So this is all like established in the first episode and he kind of like goes down this rabbit hole, but his kid had kind of created a new character because the TV show needed a new character and everyone was pushing for it. So the kid had drawn all these pictures of this big purple monster, or blue, I don't know, one of those colors.
Gad is colorblind. Yes. Side note.
I think they did mention the color, but yeah, I just...
you've seen your own color.
Yeah. I'm seeing my own color.
Yeah.
And yeah, he goes down this road and then this character basically comes alive in his head.
Right. Okay.
I don't know whether he's hallucinating or really is there. But
okay.
And then, yeah, that's kind of where the first episode kind of ends and then...
Okay. And how far are you?
I've just watched the first episode.
Okay. And are you...
I'm going to watch the rest.
Are you going to carry on?
Yeah, I can't do the binging, like one episode is enough for me.
Yeah, this morning actually, Leslie says, I think they're waiting too long on the second part of Bridgerton season 3. And I was like, okay, let's unpack this. No, well, it's too late. I was like, but you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's still on your mind. Somehow it came up this morning.
Right.
No,
and
totally.
You want what you can't have. So it's kind of, I think it is smart. And I was like, well, when is it?
Yes.
She's like, no, it's in June, like later in June. I'm like, you can wait.
Yeah, exactly.
What, a few weeks?
If they said like coming in September, I'd be like, okay, no, then that.
Coming 2026. You know,
and I think this is what's tricky. I was, what was that, the Adam Scott, Ben Stiller, TV show where they went in the work downstairs and their brain got...
It's a work pun.
Fuck's sake. I couldn't even remember it last night when I was talking.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never even heard of that.
They're going to...
Severance.
Yeah, where their work is so secretive, they like basically have this brain implant.
Okay, all right, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so it was a little bit of a somewhat sci-fi, bit of a cerebral TV show.
I couldn't finish it.
Called Severance. I finished it and it ends on this like exciting cliffhanger where you're like, I'm in.
Yes.
Give me more. And they are doing another season, but that campfire is cold now.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? The next morning when you see where you were hanging out the night before at the school camp.
Yes.
And it's like, it's just a dead campfire. It's very hard to get that like exciting again.
See, that's what it was like for, what's that? That one that won all the awards with the rich family and he owns all the kids, Kimball's the one kid. And they're all, it's kind of like Brian Cox is in it.
Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Brian Cox. Who's Brian Cox?
He's like the father.
Oh, crap.
Okay, one of us
Googling
is going to
know what you're talking about.
But yeah, also, it was like great.
Animated?
No, mm-mm. It's live action.
On what channel?
I think it was HBO.
So Showmax?
Probably, yeah. It won
The Righteous Gemstones?
No. It was more like a dry... Well, I suppose that's also... totally blanking on TV shows.
Yeah. Succession.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about Succession? That was considered one of the greatest TV shows of the last.
But
however
also,
many years.
Also, it came a point in like the previous season where I just got to the end and then like I couldn't get that interest back to push in for that last season.
Oh, people loved that.
Yeah, I know. I kind of.
Okay, I think maybe you were the anomaly on that.
I'm curious how this is going to affect stuff because a lot of stuff has been delayed because of the strike.
Yeah,
by quite a significant, like, stuff's been pushed back by like more than a year in some cases. Like,
Andor got pushed back a year.
For Mandalorian season 4 as well. Like, it's going to be like two years between seasons of some of these things. And I'm wondering.
Yeah, I don't know whether people quite understand, even the people in the trenches, how much they understand what that writer's strike meant.
Yeah.
And what its repercussions are. We're seeing such a strange time in cinema globally. We were talking about it now just before we opened up the shop. You know, something like The Fall Guy. There's no reason why that should have flopped, but it's considered a flop.
Yeah.
But it's such a great movie, and it's so cool.
It hasn't been a billion-dollar movie yet this year.
Yeah. And what did you say, Graham, about 2019? How many?
9 of the top 10 films were made over $1 billion.
In 2019. That's huge. Yeah. There was such an appetite for it.
Mm.
Things are changing. It's radical. It's wild.
Because they know it's like, I think it's 3 or 4 weeks after Fall Guy was in cinemas, you can download it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. A lot of people just wait for stuff on streaming. Like, they're not going to the expense and the effort of going to movie theaters anymore.
And my theory, which I was saying to Graham, is that so much of the charm and the spectacle of cinema is in TV, with both A-list actors, movie actors, being in TV shows, and the TV shows just being so good, where they are also on huge, large scales. I mean, the good examples like Game of Thrones. Sure. So like those were planting the seeds of how big television was going to be.
But I mean, it's not even about TV shows. I think it's nice TVs are more affordable now. Like those big widescreen TVs that have really good speakers.
That's a good point.
Almost get like a cinema experience in your house for not that much anymore.
Yeah.
And with stuff available so quickly, like, I don't know why you'd leave the house.
Well, then, so this is interesting because then, you know, this directly affects me with the Bioscope. But I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Like, relatively speaking, the Bioscope's doing well. But we are doing other things. We are doing, concept nights. And we're doing things like Dumpling Box Cinema.
Yeah.
Where, as, you know, The Boy and the Heron, great Japanese animation. We've spoken about it on the show. First few weeks of it were all very easy, sold out shows at the Bioscope. Yes. But as I could see it tapering off just a little, that's when I event it. And I do Dumpling Box, and then those sell out. Yeah. And so, like, it just takes extra effort, but you've got to make it interesting. And I think we talk about, you know, our Video Store Presents nights, which is when, you know, there's reasons why we should come out and watch. Yeah. And we're going to talk together, and we're going to hang out, and we're going to give you things to look out for. And you want to be around like-minded people. There's got to be a community.
Yeah, people are hungry to go out, but it's just like a steak and eco experience for me is...
Sure.
But like coming here is, there's a vibe. There's, you come out, like a steak and eco movie, you get out and you go like straight to your car. You go watch a movie at the Bioscope, you come out and you chat and you hang around, and it's a totally different experience.
And that's what I'm trying to sort of make sure. And the one thing I realized this year is that, you know, our staff are people that you could hopefully come to know if you come often. You just got to come once or twice and you'll recognize our staff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've never had a buddy at Sturk or a manager that I've high-fived.
Yeah. There was a guy at Eastgate who would tear the tickets, who was very, very tall. I remember him.
And that's about it.
That's about it.
No, so we've got to think about that. Our live performances have done very well recently.
Cool.
But that's not necessarily cinema. It's using the cinema space. Yes. And in some cases, it's using the screen. But
and the treatment that you've got in the room,
Oh, what, the sound treatment?
Yeah, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that's kind of standard.
Do they run it through these speakers, the side ones?
Mm.
Ooh, that's,
especially the DCP films that we do.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I just love the fact that something like Furiosa for me is like an extra. It's like an added value. It's I'm not pinning my whole business on the success of Furiosa.
Exactly.
Which we thought was cool. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's terrific.
It's a great movie, but it's almost being considered by 2019 standards. Yeah. This is
it is not doing well.
Thoroughly a flop, dude.
Like, thoroughly.
Again, like the kind of rule of thumb, like, because we don't really know how much marketing and that sort of thing cost. But the idea is you take the production budget, which is usually pretty easy to find, and then you double it. And for a movie to break even, it has to double its production budget and then its profit over and above that.
Yeah.
So Furiosa was about $170 million.
I don't even think it's made that yet.
No, it's made 114 so far.
So it hasn't even made its production value. But every single poster, budget, every single billboard,
every single trailer, all of that stuff costs money. You know?
Yeah.
Which is a pity. But like, again, we were talking about this earlier. Fury Road didn't do well either, despite the fact that like loads of people saw it. Everyone talks about it. It got tons of awards.
I mean, it made didn't its do budget well, back.
Like barely. That's the thing. I think that movie lost money because it did like $380 million off of a nearly $200 million budget.
Mm.
So like they estimated lost $20 to $40 million.
But it's so funny because history has retold the fact that it was such a great success.
Yeah. Is that the budget on that Fury Road?
Well, this is another thing. Movies, like with movies flopping and stuff, they're too freaking expensive
these
days.
That's insane.
The Fall Guy was a $200 million movie.
What?
Yeah. Which
and it made like $150. But then you look at something like, I've mentioned this before, Michael Bay made Ambulance.
Yes. You like, Ambulance.
It cost $40 million.
Yeah.
Like that's what an action movie like that should cost. It shouldn't cost $200 million. It makes no sense.
I mean, I still feel like $40 million is so much money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, cut to Ezra, which we spoke about, which could then,
it costs like
relatively speaking, it could actually do pretty well because it is such a small little movie. There's no, you know, no point in Ezra does someone, you know, do this big stunt.
Yeah, well, that's our Sound of Freedom that we saw last year.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the most profitable movies of the last, like, since the pandemic.
That's another one, Joker. The first Joker cost like $50 million or something, made a billion.
Yeah.
They're doing the sequel now, $200 million budget for the Joker sequel.
So stupid.
What are they doing?
Yeah.
Also, I wanted, like, we sometimes make our little corrections.
Yeah.
Last week you said the original Mad Max, really low budget movie. I think what you said was it may have found some middling indie success.
I can't remember if I said that, but yeah.
I think that's roughly what you said. Mad Max was a massive hit in 1979.
You mean the original Mad Max?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The first movie was huge. It was like the fifth or sixth biggest movie of the year.
Oh, the first, first Mad Max.
It was huge. It made, in 1979, it made $100 million.
Well, that's the only reason they would have made a sequel.
Yeah.
Did the sequel do well as well?
It was a huge success. I think they did reasonably well. I haven't actually looked into that, but I remember looking into that and like, because it only cost like $500,000. It was $500,000.
Okay.
For Mad Max.
Okay, lovely. I love that.
It did super well.
It just shows you the difference in how history...
It actually, if you adjust for inflation, it made more money than Fury Road.
Mm. Have you seen that first Mad Max?
Ages ago. I've been meaning to go back and watch like all of them.
Okay.
And then watch Furiosa
again. I don't know
whether
I can bring myself to watch it.
So I know that for the longest time, Blair Witch was the highest ratio, the highest profit.
Because that cost like $10,000 or something.
But then wasn't there that other like found footage horror movie where
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Yeah. That movie made a ton of money off of like nothing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's why they made a billion of them.
Yeah. Because
they can make them so cheap.
Easy to bang out. What are you? Let's just talk about Furiosa for a bit.
Mm.
I think it's amazing. It's a piece of art. It's a big bold swing. It's wild characters. It's
look. I'm one of the few people that don't like Fury Road.
Yes.
I respect it. Yeah. I get it. It's just like I was just so bored.
Yes.
But like Furiosa, I thought was great.
Mm. It had a bit more substance to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was more like traditionally narrative. Like it had like a character through line.
Yeah.
Which the first one kind of didn't have. Yeah. But I think I love stuff like, okay, we're talking about movies costing like a ton of money, but I like it when big movies like this are such a individual perspective. Like in terms of George Miller as a filmmaker. Like this is just 100%, everything about it is just George Miller. It's weird.
It's very Australian.
It's very Australian.
Yeah.
It's like very visual as well, like the first one. Like Fury Road, I mean. It's also like... The thing about what's weird about the Mad Max movies is the first three kind of don't share any kind of continuity.
Okay. Like the ones
with
in
each
the
other.
70s and
80s.
Yeah. The
three. It's like, George Miller's like, these aren't really related. Like Max is a completely different character in each movie, basically. And you have like the same actors, even in Fury Road and that sort of thing, you have like the same actors popping up in different roles. Like the guy who played Immortan Joe in Fury Road.
Oh, he was something else.
He's
in the
bad
original.
Guy in the first Mad Max. He's a completely different character. And then you have like Bruce Spence, who's a pilot in, what is the second one? Road Warrior. He flies like a little helicopter thing. And then he plays basically the same character in the third one, even though his character died in the second one.
Yeah. Do you think that something like Marvel building this very careful, intricate cinematic universe has sort of made us think that everything needs to be a cinematic universe?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, look at what studios have done and like the reaction to that. Everyone tries to make their own cinematic universe.
Yeah.
And no one else has gotten it right
reality,
other than Marvel.
In reality, who cares?
Yeah, like, most people don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like even in Fury Road, one of the guys, the character Scrotus, what a name, that actor was one of the war boys in Fury Road. So it's like...
sure, but I mean, listen, in the universe you can... you know, upgrade from Warboy to...
But I'm saying, like, this sort of thing, like, doesn't matter. Like, I think it's actually, like, it's better to make a sequel where you're not going, oh, how do we, like, we have to worry about other movies as well. It's like, just do whatever the fuck you want to do.
It's lovely. It's sort of the creative, huge $200 million version of, like, the Etch-A-Sketch, you know, that little thing where you can draw whatever you want and then you just shake the thing and it goes blank and you can do it again.
But look, I still feel like Back to the Future, the three movies have to, like, work. Indiana Jones needs to kind of fit into that universe.
But, like, I think a lot of people mistake things like that where they say, like, they'll say, oh, the Star Wars sequel trilogy didn't work because they didn't plan it. But that's not, like, because they think Marvel works because they plan everything out in advance.
The first Star Wars trilogy wasn't planned.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. Marvel isn't as planned as people think it is as they do. They, like, they're playing the biggest, like, yes and in history.
Yeah.
Where they're just building on everything that came before it. That's what the sequels of Star Wars, like, failed to do.
But also, Marvel has blueprints.
Yes.
Whether they choose to read them or not. Source material. They can go, oh my God, there was that whole Infinity Gauntlet thing. Yes. Let's lean into that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and like, what was the next big one? It was this story. We'll lean into that one.
Yeah, you have decades of Kang source now. Material. Yeah, well, probably not.
No, well, there are, but there's going to be multiple people playing him now.
Oh,
they've just revealed.
Okay.
Because the actor playing
Jonathan Majors.
The new Thanos, yeah, he got in trouble.
Yep.
Yeah, he seems like a real piece of shit.
Yeah. Basically.
And it's so disappointing because he had so much just on a, not on a personal level, I mean, just on a career level, had so much lined up for him.
He had
a whole bunch of things. And then his kind of nasty... off-camera habits and things just caught up to him. And I think that's great. Let's not get into it. Let's not get into too much of cancel culture now. But it's like, it is cool that, like, if you've got this heat on you, if you are a piece of shit in real life, like, you shouldn't be...
Yes.
You shouldn't be handed a whole new, you know, sort of wing of a billion-dollar cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Except if you're Ezra Miller.
No, but the Flash failed. It's like his career's in the toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they should have.
It all caught up. A little bit like history being made last week, where Trump got convicted for all 34 counts.
Yep.
Not like one or two, and maybe there's a little. It's like all 34 counts. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. This is a moment in history.
Even locally, the ANC only getting 40% of the vote.
Yeah.
That's massive, dude.
It is.
That is a huge swing.
I remember in the varsity days following one of the elections in particular going, we just hope they don't get 2/3 majority because then they can, like, alter the
constitution. Do whatever the hell they want, yeah.
But now you can't even get halfway.
Yeah.
Very interesting. What are you watching, Getty?
Oh, I saw that. Oh, yeah. I saw Unfrosted, a Seinfeld movie on Netflix.
Oh, what was that like?
Not very good.
I was going to say, I've heard it's very dull. Like, it's not funny and it's like not.
I've always loved Seinfeld. I've got issues with him.
Yeah,
lately.
He's been saying some stuff lately that's like, dude, just shut up.
For that reason and Israel reasons. But I still gave this a shot and I was wide awake on the plane when I started watching it and I fell asleep. It was just so corny.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. And yourself, Graham?
I watched, it ended a few weeks ago, X-Men 97. It's come up a couple times on the show, but we haven't really gotten into it.
I've only watched like the first one.
Really?
I was watching with Jess and to try and sit down with her to watch stuff.
Yeah.
I think I've just got to watch them myself.
You got to carve out your own time.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've realized that. There are a couple of shows where now it's like, okay, Liz is out. I'm keen. I've got to find my own time. I don't know when that's going to be. It's hard in a relationship.
Yeah.
What did you like about it?
Well, it's incredible, for one thing. It's so much better than I thought it was going to be. For one thing, I didn't watch the original show.
What?
Back in the 90s. Yeah. I was a Batman the Animated Series kid. I didn't watch X-Men.
I mean, I did both.
So we talked
about... I don't know why. I probably caught a couple episodes here and there. Yeah, in the 90s, there was, I think, about 5 seasons of this X-Men animated series. Mm. And this picks up, as far as I can tell, it picks up right where that left
like
off.
Like literally, it could have been released the next week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, so we haven't really spoken about like where the show like kind of starts. So I guess at the end of the last one, Professor X dies.
Yeah.
So he's dead. And now
that's how they ended it back in the 90s.
Professor X.
Bye, no more episodes.
Yes. Jesus. So this picks up after he's dead and all the X-Men are trying to like carry on and like keep the school going. And obviously Scott, Cyclops, is probably going to be the guy who picks it up. But then at the end of the first episode, it's revealed that Professor X has left the school and the X-Men and everything in his will to his best friend slash best enemy, Magneto.
What?
So now Magneto is the guy who's supposed to lead the X-Men. And it's kind of Xavier's way of saying, like, because they've always had this, like, rivalry that's, like, they're trying to, like, win each other over to the other side.
But they respected each other.
Yes, like, yeah, exactly. Like, that's watch First Class if you want, like, a really good example of, like, their kind of relationship. But his whole thinking is if he puts him in this position of, like, responsibility, gives him the responsibility of caring for the X-Men, being, like, the face of the X-Men, he will hopefully improve his ways.
Okay.
And it goes all sorts of places from there. It is like, it's very, the writing is very much in line with like a show from the 90s, like the style of how it's like superhero antics and like soap opera drama.
Okay.
Like that sort of thing from the 90s.
Okay.
But they make it work. Like it's way better written and the actors are all great and it goes places, dude.
I think
like,
almost the full voice cast came back.
Yeah, a lot of them came back.
Yeah. That's lovely.
Yeah. It's yeah, but definitely there's only 10 episodes.
On Disney Plus. I love Rogue. Like I was my biggest crush, and like Anna Paquin didn't quite get her in the X-Men in the movie series. Southern and
also like in the cartoon she has, because isn't the story that she like stole Captain Marvel's powers? Because that's all Rogue's whole thing. She touches people and she like
vaguely remember.
That's why she can like fly and do big punches and stuff. I think she like stole Captain Marvel's powers and almost killed her in the process. And that's why she like permanently has them. Because Rogue's kind of gone like back and forth, hasn't she? On like good guy, bad guy sort of thing.
I think she's always been good.
Okay. Because in this, they like, there's a lot of stuff with her and Magneto and like that, how they used to have a relationship. And when she first had her powers, she joined Magneto and not Professor X. That sort of thing. But
I really wanted to go back and watch the original series, but I'm like, this is just too much.
I think I'm going to now. I'm going to go back and watch the
old ones.
I must
renew my Disney Plus subscription.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm enjoying Disney Plus, man.
Yeah.
We go between Tracker and Lie to Me.
Oh, right.
Two, like, very easy to watch, like, whodunit serial, like, cop show kind of devices. It's great.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I had Disney for a year and a half. Exhausted like Futurama, Malcolm in the Middle, all this stuff. So now I've got Netflix for a little bit. And then I started Curb from season one.
Cool. Speaking of Netflix, I noticed yesterday one of our favorite movies from last year, Godzilla Minus One, is on Netflix.
And it just arrived.
Yes.
Oh,
without
awesome.
Any announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just noticed yesterday. I was like, everyone needs to go watch that. It's amazing. Ooh,
yeah. Okay. And then there's also a TV show. This is on Disney Plus, which I really want to start. I haven't watched it yet, called Camden.
Okay.
And it's a docuseries. Gaddy is a musician, as a fellow musician. You might find it interesting. It's a documentary about that part of London, Camden.
Oh, okay.
And all the musicians that have sort of come out of it and come out of the scene and been influenced by it.
Cool.
Oasis, Dua Lipa, Coldplay. Jeez. There's a whole bunch of people that are in it. It looks really well made.
Cool.
Okay.
Lekker, guys. I think.
We just wanted. I wanted to mention the Star Wars show starting next week. The Acolyte.
Mm.
So
okay, what's that?
So it's set like 200 years before Episode One, and it's kind of
that's ahead of everything you know in the Star Wars universe.
Okay. There's like a kid's Star Wars show called Jedi Adventures that I think he set a bit before, which is technically canon.
And there's like comic books and video games called Knights of the Old Republic, which is like 1,000 years before.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
But I mean on a nice big scale. Yeah.
So not a lot is known about it at all. Even the trailers, I still don't really know what's happening.
Mm.
But it stars one guy from Squid Games.
Yes.
The lead guy. And Carrie-Anne Moss. Mm. And they're Jedis. And it's kind of what they've hinted. It's about a Sith Lord who's slowly, one by one, killing Jedis.
Nice.
And they need it's going to be like a murder mystery kind of thing.
Lovely. But it's called The Acolyte.
The Acolyte. Yeah. So the reason it's getting a bit of flack is the showrunner, this person, Leslie Haywood, I think it is.
Okay.
She was Harvey Weinstein's personal assistant and didn't say anything.
Right.
Mm.
So, like, a lot of people are not happy like, about that.
A little bit like Cyril in the last sort of years of Zuma. Yes. It's like, why didn't you say something, bud? Why didn't you do something?
Your silence is deafening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's very much been pushing the girl power aspect. And
yeah, maybe it's her trying to redeem the time she spent a bit silenced.
Not. And it looks cool, the trailer.
Yeah, I think it looks like
I don't know what
give
it's going to be.
Give a chance.
But it's going to be a double episode on the day that this podcast releases.
Ah,
it will
cool.
be on Disney Plus.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lekker, man. Thank you, guys. Thanks for a lovely day.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's nice to chat to you guys on a sort of cozy, quiet, you know, mizzy day.
Yes.
I'm going to make some candy with Duis wine today.
No.
What?
Yeah. Asher dropped off some wine and we're going to do a little experiment.
Interesting.
You're going to add the wine into your candy?
I'm going to use wine instead of water and see what happens.
Okay. All right. Let's give some context. Duis Wine has been a nice sponsor and collaborator at the video store for the last month. But Gad, we're not working a shift at the video store. We're not playing keyboard. In Short Straw has a candy company.
Yeah.
Called Gaddle's Candy Company.
Available at the Bioscope.
Yeah. It's available at the Bioscope. And I just love, I take such great joy in messaging him going, we need more rock.
And the distance between the messages have been getting shorter and shorter. I think it was 10 days between the last two.
We've been doing a couple of like really big events where they want snacks. And so you just give out a whole selection.
Right.
And you just put them for people to grab. And so people go for the candy.
Nice.
Which is lovely. Okay, so you're going to try and include wine in the candy making.
Yeah, they wanted to make wine gums, but I'm like, I don't do gummy sweets. I do hard candy.
Yeah.
So we'll see if it works.
Is there actual wine in wine gums? Not the ones we have as kids, but I mean,
I've never seen...
one do wine in wine gums?
I'm
do you think
I'm
that's
sure.
maybe like where it started? Like,
I was going to say, I wonder if they used to be.
Yeah.
Because I know when you cook with wine, it doesn't become alcoholic anymore. So
yeah,
you're not exactly
the alcohol
getting drunk.
Cooks
so like
out of it.
Weed gummies.
Yeah.
Wild. I remember someone putting it in olive oil and like making weed schnitzels. It's like a whole world opens up to you when you can
put weed in that American exchange student.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd appreciate this. His name was Shlomo.
All right.
Nice little
first
Jewish
time
name.
When I visited Shlomo, I discovered Tropica. The drink.
Right.
Never had it before, and it's all he had to drink. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, what? This is amazing.
It took an American to show you Tropica.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I later caught up with him, and he has a production company in New York.
Okay.
Called Slow Motion. And I was like, you're the greatest. I love this guy. All right. Magic.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for a lovely day.
Mm.
I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.